Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Some years ago, when I was a seminary student, I cut my teeth in ministry as a college pastor, so working with college students. And the Lord took me from one church over to another church. And I can remember because it was my birthday, September 15th. I was actually about to speak at another church when someone at the church came up and they kind of tapped me on the shoulder and they said, I need to talk to you for just a second. And I said, okay. So we step over to the side and they said, listen, we need you to know that there's been a shooting at the church that you had just been serving at. And it's all over the news, but we just wanted you to know. And so after I visited with them for just a little bit about it, I said, listen, I think I need to go over and help out over there because it was really a truly chaotic scene. I pull up onto the site and you've got helicopters flying everywhere. You have the news stations are everywhere around. You got the church over here. And then across the way, you have a school where they were still pulling because there was a rally that night. They were still pulling college students as well as high school students out of the facility so that they could get them to a safer place. Where I ended up going was across the street over to the school so I could sit down with these kids that had just been in a scene where a person had walked in a time of worship and they had opened fire on the scene, even throwing a pipe bomb over into a group of students. Now, the reason that I begin with this story is because, one, it's true. It's something that happened. But also, it speaks to the reality of the kinds of circumstances that we might face in life. There are going to be times where we face trials, and some of those trials are going to be extraordinary, just like that moment. I always felt for the pastor. His name is Al Meredith, who's now retired. Great guy, someone that pastored the church incredibly well in what is, at the very least, a very difficult circumstance. And to kind of pile it on for Al, he had just landed his plane from having done his mother's funeral when somebody told him, there's been a shooting at your church. And so he immediately leaves from the airport. He goes over. And as he steps up, you have the news that are just kind of, you know, circling him up. What do you think? What do you have to say? What's going on? Can you imagine being put in that situation? Difficult, to say the least. One, grieving the loss of your mother. But two, knowing that sitting inside of the building of the place where your people gather to worship, there are members of your congregation that are dead on the floor. And how is it that you're going to take care of them and their family? All that pressing in on his heart. One of the things that he did say, though, and something that stuck with me over the years, was this. He said, you don't squeeze an orange and get Dr. Pepper. Isn't it true? You don't squeeze an orange and get Dr. Pepper. And right now, we were facing, he said, as a church, we're facing a moment where we're being squeezed. And as we're being squeezed, what we're finding out is what's really inside of us. For some of us in our circumstances, maybe even something that you're dealing with right now, you are being squeezed. And for some of you, what you're finding is you thought that you're an orange, but what is coming out is Dr. Pepper. And it's making you step back, and spiritually, you're having to assess and reassess what it is that you really believe, what it is that you really worship. James actually has something to say about this in James chapter 1, verses 2 through 5, where it reads like this. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. Now think about that. It's interesting to me on a number of levels that James would say some of the things that James just said. Consider it pure joy. Now, I don't know about you, but a lot of the circumstances and trials that I've faced in my life, I start to get squeezed, and I don't think, you know, I'm considering it pure joy that I'm right where I'm at right now. And you have probably felt the same way. You get squeezed, and what you feel really is the pressure of the moment. What you don't feel maybe is joy, but consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. Why would he say something like that? I mean, on the face of it, it seems like really bad advice until you start to press in a little bit deeper. Because the reason that he says to consider it all joy is because of what the trial can produce. Consider it all joy. Now, there are different people that are sitting in here today, and there are different people that are online with us today. One of the things that I can guarantee is that trials are going to hit every single person that's in here. I mean, it's those that are going through trials. That's some of us that are here today. There are those that have just come through a trial, and it's over, and you go, thank you. And then there are others who are about to face a trial. You just don't know that it's coming yet. There are different people that are here. It's even this. It's not that you're the one that's going to be facing the trial. It's maybe your wife is the one that's going to be facing the trial. Your husband is the one that's going to be facing the trial. It might be your child is the one that is facing the trial, or someone that you love very much is facing a trial. We could cast this net in a pretty broad way, but one of the things that James said, it says, whenever you face it. So what he's trying to get at is, it is a reality, the reality of trials. Not if you're going to have them, but when you're going to have them and what kind you are going to have. You know, my favorite type is when we have layers of trials that we're dealing with, and it's not just one kind. It's not if, it's when. James even uses a word here that's really broad. It's really broad. So you kind of, you know, drill into it a little bit and you say, what is James trying to say here? He says, you're going to face trials of many kinds. There's not just one kind of trial that we'll face. For some of us, for example, we might be facing physical trials. We might be facing physical trials. A physical affliction that just does not seem to go away. Paul, by the way, talks about something like this in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, when he says, I have a thorn in the flesh, and this just won't go away. Most scholars think that he was either dealing with some sort of visual issue, his eyes were failing him. Some think that because in his letters he says, see with what big letters that I write you. Maybe he was having to write big letters because it's the way that he could see it. We're not sure. We know that Paul traveled through the Mediterranean basin. He was very active in missions. Some scholars think that he had probably picked up malaria as he had gone through. He was incredibly sick. Or some would think that he was epileptic. We're not really sure. What we do know is he says he was facing an affliction. And so he goes to God in prayer with it. By the way, good move by Paul, right? He goes to God in prayer with it. And the response that he gets is, no, this is going to stay. This is going to stay. And my grace is sufficient for you, even in this. And what people will see, Paul, is not your strength, but my strength. And what Paul says in response to this response is, that sounds good. That sounds good. Now imagine what he's having to accept in that moment, is that the physical affliction, whatever it might be, is going to be with him for the rest of his life. It's not going to be going anywhere. And he accepts the fact, and he says the ministry goes on because the grace of Jesus is enough for it to carry through. He goes forward. We all have similar choices, don't we? And some of you sitting here today, you are dealing with physical affliction. This afternoon at 3 o'clock, we're going to be having the service for Helene Muhlmann. Now, many of you who are members here at Woodridge, you would know exactly who I'm talking about, because there were moments of prayer that she led us in on a Sunday morning, and all she had to do, for me, all she had to do was say, Lord Jesus, Lord Jesus. You know what I'm talking about. And I'm like, we are there. We are in the presence of the Lord. But you know what? With Miss Helene over this last year, she endured a lot of suffering, physical suffering. At one point, she couldn't even talk. And so the way that she would correspond with me was by email. And so we emailed every day. Sometimes it was as simple as a scripture that I would send to her or a word of encouragement. She was too weak to talk. We still found a different way. But she always pressed on. What I saw about Miss Helene was it did not matter the circumstance that was in front of her. She was always the same person. It didn't matter. She was always the same person. But don't be fooled. Over this last year, she had a lot of physical trials. Maybe you're having those this morning. Maybe there's something related to your health. Maybe there's something related to your circumstances. James says that's something that we have to go through. There are other types of trials that we deal with. Emotional trials. Some of that can be because of the third category, which are circumstances that we face. For example, an alcoholic husband, an alcoholic wife, an alcoholic child, a family member that is addicted to drugs. These are circumstances that you don't necessarily have direct control over, but boy, it's certainly a part of your life because the impact of those choices you're having to deal with every single day. Other circumstances, a child that passes away, or financial struggles. James was writing to a group here that had been persecuted. The way that he even began this letter to them was, he says, to the Jewish Christians that have been dispersed. They have literally been scattered everywhere, and the reason is because they had been pursued, chased down. People were trying to kill them in virtue of their beliefs that they possessed. Boom, scattered like buckshot. Finally, the persecution comes to an end. But you know what that was? That was a circumstantial trial that these people were dealing with. And you can imagine, because you know it to your experience, the emotions that are born from it. Some of us emotionally, we go all over the place when we're dealing with trials. But the reason that James writes this is not just to say there's a reality of trials that we're going to deal with, but there's a reason for them. There's a reason for them. He says this. He says, you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. There is something that will result from this. There is something that will result from this. In fact, he says the word, you know it. You know it. But he means something very specific there. What he's not saying is you kind of have this understanding in a broad and vague, you've never experienced it, but just in general, you kind of know God's up to something. Instead, he's writing to a group that has been through a trial, and he says, you know from the trial itself, you have an experience that has proven something to you. You know it. In the thick of your experience, you have seen it. It's the kind of knowledge that you can't get by sitting in a chair. It is the kind of knowledge that you get from the life that you live. He says, you know it. You have seen it. God brought something out of you. I mean, here's some possibilities for the way that we handle trials. Let me just throw a couple of them at you. He says, one thing we might know, after we have endured suffering, we discover that our faith is not just intact, but it's actually stronger than it was before. That is a possibility for how we respond to the circumstances that we deal with. We apply what we know about God to the trials that we are facing. There are other possibilities, though. For example, trials might also expose the weaknesses in our faith. The chinks in our armor, so to speak. A trial might show those. He uses the word testing, that you might be tested. How many of you enjoyed tests when you were in school? Can I see those hands? I didn't. I did not. I did not like pop quizzes. I didn't like the quizzes that I knew were coming. I really didn't like the ones I didn't know were coming. I also didn't like midterms. I didn't like finals. I wasn't exactly huge on midterm papers or final papers that had to be handed in. And remember, this is coming from a guy that finished a PhD. I didn't necessarily enjoy the process. There was something else that was out in front of me that I saw the process was worth it. And it was that there was going to be a knowledge that I would gain, and I saw it as worth it. James says, you're going to be tested. That is to prove or maybe even disprove the genuineness or the reality of your faith. That's why I said maybe for some of us, we get squeezed and we think we're an orange and Dr. Pepper is what flows out. Some of us, we find out we weren't people of faith at all. But one of the things that James is trying to point out here is this very important for us. Is that really the trials that God allows in your life, the trials that God allows in my life, can be the foundation of your future spiritual development. It can be the foundation of your future spiritual development. Let me give you an example. I want you to think about a good teacher. I want you to think about a good teacher. All of you probably have, you look back on your childhood, you look into high school, maybe you look into college, and you have a teacher that is your favorite teacher. Are you there with me yet? Do you have somebody in your mind? Somebody that wasn't, they were there in life with you. Somebody that had that kind of impact. When you think about tests, which all of us agree we didn't necessarily like, a good teacher will give a test over information that he or she has already taught you. One of the things that I always said to my students, whether it was when I was teaching at A&M or any of the seminaries, was this: I'm going to teach you over the things that I have taught you. I'm not here to try to teach you over the things I didn't expect you to know. I'm here to teach you over the things I expected you to know. And I remember giving a test. This was in a class where I was reading a lot on symbolic logic. This was at A&M. And I'm giving the final exam. I wasn't expecting them to enjoy it, and they didn't. But I'm giving this exam on symbolic logic, and a student walks up at the end. And I had said in all the preparation, I'd even spent the whole last class working proof after proof after proof with them. That was all I did. No new information. It was just, I walked in and I said, how many of you know what the word inculcate means? And they're all kind of sitting there. And I said, it means I'm about to beat this in your head. That's what it means. And I just turned to the board and boom, started putting proof after proof on the board. And here was the word that I said. Hear what I'm telling you. If you can do what we're doing today, and if you can work any of the proofs in the text that has been assigned, you will ace this test. You will ace it. And then I let them go. Y'all go study hard. And then we come back. And the student comes up after taking the exam. He didn't enjoy it. He walks up with the test. And he just kind of drops it in front of me. He goes, well, that was interesting. So I just took the test as he starts to walk out. And I was like, well, hold on. Because I'm not taking the test, right? By the way, I aced the test. I know you're wondering. I aced it. So I walk out with him. He steps outside the door. I said, come here for a second. Come here. And he walks back over. And I said, you don't seem to be pleased with the exam. He says, well, I'm not, because, you know, the proofs that were there, those aren't the same ones that you worked in class. I'm like, well, of course not. Of course not. I said, but come here. So I had the book and I opened the book. And I said, which one did you not like? Which questions did you not like? He's like, well, I thought number 7 was completely unfair. I said, okay. And so I opened up to a section of the book, opened up to a page, and there was the question right there in the book. There it was. And I said, what were my parting words to you before we left? If you can work every proof in the book, you'll be able to ace this test. Did you even crack the book? And then I went back in. My work there was done. Here's the reason that I even bring this up. When you go through trials, because you will, God has already given you the information to pass the test. He's already given it. Whether you studied for the test is actually not even the point. Whether you took the time to prepare for the test is actually not even the point. And sometimes, we retake a test because we didn't pass it the first time. Sometimes we retake it. Sometimes we go back through similar circumstances, similar trials, because we didn't pass it the first time it came around. And the teacher is saying, let's try that again. Because God is trying to produce something in us through the circumstances that he allows around us. That's the lesson. Sometimes we're in the same trial, even for years, because we haven't mastered what the trial is trying to teach us right now. Do you remember verse 4? Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. In other words, here's the result that God has in mind. Let it finish its work. Let it finish its work. Here's an example. For those of you that have ever run long distance, I used to some years ago. One of the ways that we would train is that we would put 5-pound weights around our ankles. And I ran 2-mile, mile, mile relay and cross country. And we would train with 5-pound weights around each of our ankles as we ran. And the reason that we did that, the reason that we put extra weight on, is because it would prepare us even better for when we got on the track to really go. You see what I'm saying? We would run that long distance. It was a way of helping us to finish the race in a way that is strong. Here's another way of saying what James is trying to say. Complete the test. We mature and complete the test. Think about it. Wouldn't it be odd that a student begins an exam and about halfway through they go, I'm done. James is saying, let the process run through, because the process is what's going to produce. Remember God's goal in all this, James has already said, is your maturity in your faith. In other words, you look more like Arnold Schwarzenegger than you do Napoleon Dynamite, at least spiritually. You understand what I'm saying? The process has brought something out. Here's what I'm aware of, though. This is difficult for everybody. Everybody. Without exception. It's difficult for the person that's enduring the trial. It's difficult for others. For example, a parent that's watching their child go through a trial. It's difficult when you watch a friend go through a trial. There wasn't anything in here that James said. And by the way, it's easy. It's difficult. But we cannot get in the way of the trial because it keeps us from the maturity the trial is meant to form in us. Now, here's what this means. Take a look at the way we pray when we're in a time of trial. Have you thought about that? By constantly asking, and it's totally fine in full honesty before God to tell the Lord what you're feeling, what you're thinking. This is hard for me. There's nothing wrong with that. Remember Paul, I gave you the example before. I have this thorn in the flesh. Would you remove this from me? Nothing wrong with asking, but what when God says, no, that's just not going to happen? How do we respond? How do we respond? Do we continue to petition and say, no, but I expect you to? Or do we, following Paul's example, step back and say, I look forward to what the trial is going to produce? And I would hope that in all of this is that people would see your strength and my weakness. That's something that is hard to pray. But James gives us two responses in these verses to trials. One I've already mentioned. He says, count it all joy. Count it all joy. Just this week, there was an image that became viral all over social media. For those of you that were out there, it even was all over the news. There was an older man, this goes over into the Middle East, and he was executed for his Christian faith. His family sent word out, and it just went everywhere because the image that you have is you have this old man, literally, he is down, he is literally kneeling down, and as he's kneeling down like this, behind him are three people with guns, and he knows that his death is right there. What you don't see in the story is that everything leading up to that moment was this group of Islamic terrorists breaking all of the teeth out of his mouth, torturing him over the period of several weeks, all of which was to say, we expect you to renounce your faith, and let's give this man his due. He didn't, and he wouldn't. Friends, those are stories that we don't deserve. That we don't deserve. And it's in our world, even right now. The people of James dealt with it. The people of today are dealing with it. And the first thing that James said was, count it joy. Count it joy. See, counting, he says, it's an accounting term. You literally count it up. Basically saying, step back and see how God really adds it all up, though. Just step back and see how God really adds it all up. Count it as joy. And when you really believe God is up to something in your trials, it changes the way you look at your trials. I don't enjoy it. I just look forward to what you're doing. I look forward to what you're going to produce. And I'm going to let you produce that. I'm going to let you do it. That's one response. Here's the second that he gives us. Is he says, go to God in the middle of it and ask for wisdom. Go to him and ask for wisdom. Ask for it. That's in verse 5. If you lack wisdom, ask God. Maybe don't ask him to get you out of it, because that would be like getting halfway through the test. You get pulled out. You don't finish the test. And you also don't get the result from it either. Maybe that's one thing. But here's a perfectly good prayer for us to ask. God, this is a mess. It's not going anywhere. It might be a physical affliction, a circumstantial affliction. It isn't going anywhere. I understand that. But could you make it make sense for me? Make it make sense for me, because I don't get it. That is honest to the Lord, which, as James says, if you lack wisdom and understanding, he will give it to you without reproach. I'm not knocking you for not understanding, and I'm happy for you to see what I'm up to. Ask for it, and ask, how am I supposed to respond to get the most out of what you are doing in the circumstance that I am in? And that, my friends, is a worthy prayer. How do I maximize this for what you want to do to change me? Are we willing? The question for us today is, are we willing to say it's worth it? It's worth it. That's tough, isn't it? And just as I was looking at the image and reading the news reports of the elderly gentleman that was executed just this week, there was something that he saw that was more valuable and more precious. And it was a promise of something that Christ was going to do for him through that circumstance. Even Jesus, when he looked at the cross, what Hebrews says is he counted the cross as all joy because of what God was going to do through the suffering, through the trial. It's time for some of us to start seeing things the way that Jesus sees things and the way that God wants us to see these things. So here's my question for you this morning. How many of you are out there facing trials? Anybody? How many of you are dealing with a physical trial? How many of you are dealing with circumstantial trials? How many of you are dealing with emotional trials? Let me read it one more time for you, what James has to say. He says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach. It will be given to you."
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.